Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So welcome back to Tech Makers, the Ubisoft podcast. I'm your host, David Usher, podcast host for the third time. I'm the founder of Reimagine AI, the artificial intelligence creative studio. And on this episode, we are going to be talking about forging the future and environments. Guys, could you introduce yourselves and what you do?
Sure. Yeah, my name is Shaheen Rabbani. I'm a scientist and R&D scientist at LaForge, and I'm the head of the environment group at LaForge, and that's it for me, I guess.
Claude? And I'm Claude Langlais. I'm a director of the Anvil pipeline team, so it's one of our internal tech at Ubisoft. I've been in Ubisoft since 1999, working on different games, but right now really focusing on developing and evolving our internal technology within Ubisoft for all the different games.
So this podcast really centers around LaForge and how it sits within Ubisoft. So what I've been really interested in finding out from everyone that comes through the series is how the integration between science and product is developed, how you come up with how scientists are brought into the pipeline, and how those ideas sort of become what the experience is like for a scientist coming into this sort of more product-based world, if you will.
Yeah, I can definitely maybe give you a bit of background context. So what we try to do at LaForge is basically to bridge the gap between what happens in at universities, for example, academia, and then the reality of production and all these problems. So there is a gap because we have different sets of preferences in two different universes, right? Academic and production worlds. And a lot of those papers and, you know, amazing works that are presented at conferences and journals and all that, they're not really applicable to what we need to have in our production, because a lot of times they're just focusing on theoretical aspects, right? On the other hand, we have production, we have a lot of constraints, and we have a lot of engineering problems at hand to solve. So what we are trying to do is to find overlapping areas where we can actually take the best of the two worlds, and that's our niche. So we have a lot of collaborations with universities, and we get a lot of interns. We hire a lot of PhDs, and then we try to stay ahead of the curve in the game industry by working on, top-notch, cutting-edge technologies that are also, they have enough value in terms of, academic contribution and all that. So this is what we do at LaForge. We bridge the gap.
I'm curious what the personal journey from the scientific, because you came from academic world. Was there a change of mindset that you had to go through?
Oh, absolutely.
How did that transition happen?
So on a personal level, it was a true transformation for myself, because if you're a PhD student like myself, sitting in your lab most of the time all alone, working on one single problem, banging your head onto the wall and, questioning your life while I'm doing this, and all that. You have all these existential problems. You're deprived of a lot of good things that you would otherwise experience when you're working with a company or for a company. As an example, you're part of the team if you're working in a company. More often than not, you're not working in a silo. You're part of a team. So you learn a lot and you're pushed a lot. And, if you feel down one day, people can actually carry you mentally. So that part is something that people actually don't really see when they're doing their graduate studies. The other side is technical. So when you're solving problems as a graduate student, you don't really care a lot about constraints like budget constraints, GPU, CPU constraints, memory constraints. And these constraints are challenges that that make it more interesting if you want to be innovative and creative. So to me, that was both of them. They were really, really rewarding when you can actually adopt them.
What was the first idea? What was the entrance idea?
When I joined LaForge, yeah. I was so during my PhD, I was doing character animation, you know, robotics and stuff like that. So I was part of the Deep Motion group at LaForge. So I was doing character animation, but then after 2 years, I switched to fluid simulation, which was my kind of like passion.
Okay,
but I didn't know how to do, so they gave me the chance to, you know, self educate and all that. But the first year was actually really hard for me. Because you have this sort of like ego that you have to put aside. Like, if you get your diploma, your first reaction is, your first impression is that, hey, I know everything.
Right.
Which is completely, it's the complete opposite of what you're supposed to, the way that you're supposed to behave, right? And it's very common. So we know that when we actually hire PhD students, we know that this is really natural. And you have to deal with that. So gradually you learn that you learn the frontier of knowledge and how limited it is. So you become more humble when you see all these problems and all these great minds working production. A lot of them, they don't have a diploma, but they're actually way, way smarter than, you know, many people in academia. I can testify for that. So you become humble. I became humble, I guess. So that was really interesting.
Is there a reorientation of goal? You know, if you're a PhD student, your concept of what is success in a project is probably different than in a production setting. You know, you need to deliver something very different.
Yeah, it was definitely true. I mean, so a lot of times when you work on, let's compare the two again. So if you are a graduate student, usually you think about ways to impress other graduate people, graduate level people, profs. And that means not always, but more often than not, more of the theoretical side, a lot of math, a lot of physics. And so the criteria is different, right? So that's your goal, how to impress other academic people. But when you come to like an environment like that's provided by Ubisoft and LaForge, for example, your goal gradually changes. Now you want to actually make something that ultimately you would see it in the hands of, you know, normal people, like users, right? And that gives you a different kind of appreciation. And it's a different, I would say it's actually more addictive because it's more realistic.
Absolutely. I'm going to ask you, because you've been there for 6 years, correct? Almost 6 years. So you've seen the transition of LaForge from what it was to what it is. Have you seen a big change in what its mission was to what it is to what it's become? Have you seen transition?
Yeah, actually, I guess I was lucky enough to be one of the first people who got employed. When I was employed, LaForge hadn't started yet officially, so they were recruiting people. And back then, it was just like me and a couple of other guys and Olivier Pomares and Yves Jacquier, and, you know, that's it. So it was a big room, empty room, just us. And some days, me and Olivier, we used to just go out and walk and talk and daydream about the day that this thing will kick off and, you know, it will get momentum. And now we are, I mean, LaForge has... you know, has expanded a lot. So we have like, I don't know exact number, but maybe 25, 30 people kind of full-time. And then we have like almost 20, 30, you know, interns coming and going. And we have like a branch in Toronto and also in Bordeaux. And, you know, so it's expanding.
Yeah, yeah.
So seeing the growth of LaForge has been, it's like, so I would always think about it as some sort of like startup within a big company, right? So we had to prove ourselves, you know, to get enough credit, to get enough recognition, to be able to move forward. So I've seen the growth over the past 5-6 years, and it's been amazing to be part of this journey.
What are you working on now?
Oh, right now?
Yeah.
Right now is, well, I can talk about it for hours, but I'm not going to do that. Right now, I'm working on... So we established this new group, which is the youngest group, youngest team at La Forge called Environment Group. So what we are working on is improving the immersive experience for the game players, right? For the gamers. So that basically means everything that goes on in the map, except for the character animation or higher level designs, that can affect the experience, right? So rendering, fluid simulation, like, you know, fire and smoke, destruction, you know, flock behavior, swarm behavior, you know, dynamic maps and all that, right? So everything that you basically see around yourself that define the universe around you, right? So there is a lot of physics, a lot of graphics. But per se, I mean, specifically, we're working on a project called Torch VFX. And that is an ambitious project that has made progress, which aims to provide a technology fast enough to simulate fluids like fire and smoke, so one day you can actually have them in your games, right? So, and that's one part of it, which is targeting the production, like a direct integration into our game engines. And the other part of it is a VFX tool in the hands of the artists, so that we don't rely on third-party, you know, software companies. We have, like, in-house, Ubisoft in-house VFX tool.
Okay.
So it's really, really ambitious, but we have made really good progress.
Where is the pipeline? Like, so, in the roadmap?
So personally, I started working on this almost 4 years ago. It was just me and my computer, and, you know, that's it. And I didn't know anything. Still, I didn't know much, I should say. But right now we have like a pipeline which is fast enough so we can actually beat a lot of high-tech solvers in the industry. We kind of match the performance of the best solvers. For example, the competitor is Embergen, like DjangoFX, that many companies, including Epic Games, like in Unreal, you have the plugin. For Embergen, we can actually claim that our speed, our performance are comparable, and we're just starting. We have a lot of ideas to push it, and so we came up with new methods. We submitted a paper to SIGGRAPH, like, you know, a few months ago to present the new techniques we're developing, and I guess we have a good momentum, we have a good direction, and we have a lot of good ideas. It's just right now the amount of ideas that we have, it's definitely more than the manpower that we have.
Right, right. Yeah.
So we are like a few people, and we are expanding, and we are just you know, juggling between many different things. So hopefully we can expand to get enough enough great minds
to keep it all going. And let me transition to you, Claude. So you're doing pipeline stuff, taking things that come out of LaForge and moving them into pipeline.
Yeah, by pipeline we mean the whole. It's a production pipeline, so right. The whole tool set to create the game.
Of course. So what is your role there specifically?
So we've just joined in a team together with LaForge. So the goal is basically to transition all the steps that they take, bridging the gap between the R&D world and something that's much closer to productions. But it's still a gap between this and how does it fit in how you create a whole game. So the window of opportunity to integrate new R&D and new technologies in a game is relatively narrow because you have a production cycle.
Right.
At some point, you need to take something and scale it and make sure it's going to ship, it's going to be stable and everything. But what LaForge is doing is really bringing in a solution that's almost all the way there with like a central team for a production pipeline. What we do is we integrate it and want to remove some of the risk associated with adopting that kind of change and doing this and adding maybe a layer of support and supporting as well the integration from the pure, not the pure R&D, but the advanced R&D for games aware of the constraints that's done in LaForge and adapting it to the constraints that we have in a particular production pipeline, whether it's Anvil or even Snowdrop, which is another internal tech that we have.
Have you moved a lot of things through from LaForge?
We've done a few. It's a relatively new initiative that we have. We're kind of transforming the way we produce games at Ubisoft. And really, as Shane was saying, we need more brains, more brain power. So it's a way of channeling all this this brain power, at least, to reach all the productions at Ubisoft. So we're kind of building this central tech team so that the same – there's no less and less effort that's duplicated from game per game, because historically – like in the industry or even at Ubisoft, each team had more or less their own production pipeline.
They're sort of
so
siloed.
Now we're kind of a bit more siloed, and now we have a much wider bandwidth to bring those innovations directly to productions in a standard way. So if people don't need to take the initial step themselves, people support them and bring it so that it's easier to use in production. A bit like you're mentioning existing plugins that are available on Unreal. It's a similar kind of pattern. We play a role where it's much easier for users to get their hands on it.
Cool. So, Shane, has anything moved out through the pipeline has from the new project yet?
So we're taking steps to do the industrialization integration with the Snowdrop. So right now we have a kind of like a simple backbone, bare backbone pipeline integrated in Snowdrop. The rendering side it needs work, but the pipeline is there. So, and we are actually planning to inner source it, meaning that, you know, making sure that people across all the studios, they have access, like anyone who has access to Snowdrop, for example, has access also to this branch with this pipeline so they can start contributing. So we're planning to do the same thing with Anvil. So hopefully we will find the right way of doing it. We just need, again, so we have the manpower problem, and because people are just busy, right? So we have so many things to do. It's just... It takes some effort to put aside, to make sure that we can come up with a plan and actually put aside some budget, like time and energy, to have this sort of collaboration. But definitely there is a will. Increasingly, even more recently, I've been receiving a lot of emails from VFX programmers from different studios. A lot of them working with Anvil. They really want to see it. They want to contribute somehow, especially programmers, to have this sort of plugin for Anvil. And so we are getting, like, you know, positive feedback. It's just we need to have a concrete plan.
So, Claude, can you tell me a little bit more about Anvil and how it fits into the Ubisoft environment?
Anvil is a game production pipeline. So it's a whole set of tools that goes from how you start, like from the thought of it, start creating assets, whether it's an external commercial software like 3ds Max or anything. How do you bring it into the game? How do you build AI and behaviors and how the cameras react to the players? What we call the three Cs, the characters, the camera, and the controls, how the player interact with the game. So the Anvil pipeline is something that was kind of built from scratch. It was an evolution to bring technology within Ubisoft to a next step, but back in 2004. So the team had just shipped Prince of Persia: Sands of Time on another internal tech, and we wanted to build something that would serve multiple games long-term. So we still alive today with multiple games, so I think we've managed to do something on that side. And that technology was built so that it scales, is supported for multiple projects. And where it fits within Ubisoft today is that we have a team dedicated to support it and evolve it for multiple games at the same time. So we have a common core that's shared across multiple games. And that team now is within the production technology at Ubisoft, is where we push technology so that we can differentiate the games that we build from the market. So we really push innovation, whether in the way we produce games, like how we push open world games or experiences like esports or like Rainbow Six Siege that Shane was talking about, was also built on Anvil, slightly different version of Anvil. And all that, this ecosystem of production technology also involves LaForge. So that's how it's really a key element of adding innovation from say, more advanced research than you can afford to do in a typical project, because you have really time constraints as well as physical constraints and technical constraints on the devices that you ship. So this kind of combination really brings it so that we give our game content creators the best tools they can have, the best means of coming up with these breakthroughs that Shaheen was talking about, like really something that unlocks new possibilities that you can do in the games. So whether it comes from LaForge, from what can be possible in the pipeline, the kind of tool sets that we build, and as well from the game production teams themselves. They come up with new ideas and that one experiment, and this collaboration all together, all the different people and different mindsets that we have. That's the beauty of making games. You get people from art background, from programming background, from audio background. You get all of them together. You get something that's really, really amazing. So that's all these ideas kind of jumbling around the Anvil production pipeline. And we have another internal tech as well that does something similar, just a different, different spin on it, different types of game. It's really all about empowering the content creators. Ultimately, it's to deliver the best experiences. The players need to have fun and be delighted. So when we're talking about environments and being really immersed, whatever we can do to connect it, find new ways to interact with an environment and limit the what we call the suspension of disbelief. So you're really immersed and you feel like the world is, you're connected to the world through your avatar.
Can you give me more specifics about Anvil in relation to how it relates to, you know, a comparison between Unreal and Unity?
So Anvil, it's the internal tech at Ubisoft. It's how we build games that have their own edge, that kind of reach or innovate in a new way so the players have a new experience in their hands. So that's how we can push and research and advance ways of creating games that is not necessarily yet possible in existing other tools out there. So it comes with, as I was mentioning, like getting a lot of people from different perspectives together, really working on the core tech itself. Whereas if you're using an external tech that's evolving, for sure, you have a bit less of a hand to work together with the creators to make it evolve. Whereas here, when you have an internal tech at Ubisoft, you're much closer to the projects. You build something for the long term, but you can also push in given directions that gives an edge and pushes the R&D, and we have a fast flow, say, for innovation that's been researched and catered for the game environment built at LaForge. That's how we get that edge to really see the flow from the research that you do all the way into the player's hands in a tight bundle that gets reused as well within different games at Ubisoft.
I guess that's always the rub or the balance is between, it's between research and how you actually put it into a pipeline to make it a usable product that can scale.
There's an aspect of the pipeline. There's also the users, like the will. When the will is there, finding the opportunity to bring it to them.
There is a will, there is a way.
Maybe.
But we did have, on the animation side, Choreograph is something where we managed to integrate an Anvil. Has been used. In Assassin's Creed Valhalla and other games.
Cool.
So that came from LaForge.
Okay, very interesting. So what would you say the in terms of where the product is, the dream of where the product is, but where it's going, what you really want to, where you think it's going next?
So we can talk about different levels, like different timelines and different components. If you're just talking about fluid simulation on its own, it can be, you know, a very nice topic because on its own, it is pretty. It's one of the holy grails of the game industry. Because imagine that if you could set anything on fire, if you had a lot of explosions, if you had, for example, a grenade like a smoke grenade, where you know or have some intuition about how it works, and then use it to your advantage during the gameplay, it's going to affect the gameplay a lot. So we know that this is this can be an sort of like. Interrupting technology or some sort of paradigm shift if you can pull it off, right? And let's face it, it's not easy. We are not the only one who have ever tried. Many other companies, they have tried, they failed, and there is a good reason for that. but we have good ideas, and we think it's worth it. It's worth the risk. Now, if, and there is a big if, it happens, you're going to see two different products, but both of them sort of sharing the same technology or the same science behind it. So one is for the production, like, you know, directly integrated in our games. And then you can actually design games based on knowing the fact that you can have real-time fluid simulation. So you can have, let's say, water, you can have like magma, you can have like fluids, you can have all sorts of different things. And then based on that, you can design your game, which could be a new kind
of type of... So real-time, they can react with players.
Exactly. And by real-time, just to make sure we are clear on what it means.
Yeah.
So right now what we have is mostly animation. So what it means is there are different techniques, but for the most part, what you have is a bunch of billboards, like 2D animations of fire and smoke. And then an artist has to spend a lot of time to come up with ways to place them in the 3D space such that he can actually create an illusion of fire, right? And it takes a lot of experience, a lot of effort to do that. And then we have some procedural techniques to spawn fire and to spread fire. But these things usually rely heavily on intuition and a lot of work, and these are not transferable to other scenes. So pretty, well, not flexible. So that's one. The other thing is you can't really interact with them. So if somebody is walking through the smoke, you're not going to see any interaction.
Right.
So a lot of limitations that otherwise you would be really happy playing with smoke and fire in real time.
Well, in a way, the environment becomes a player in the game.
Exactly.
Right? It becomes an element in the game that moves the action or...
I can give you an example. Like,
yeah, please.
I'm not sure about... I have yet to test it with Rainbow Six here, but I know in Counter-Strike, for example, many people are familiar with Counter-Strike. It's a pretty old game, right? There is like one-way smoke, and it's a bug, but it has become a feature, right? Meaning that if you're one side of the smoke, you can see the other player, but not the other way around.
Oh, I see. You can
take that to your advantage, right? And there are tutorials how to do this, how to use it, right? So it is that important to have a consistent consistent simulation. So just want to make that clear that it is difficult to have real-time simulation, but it's not the end of it. Let's say if we have it, if we can afford like a real-time fluid simulation, it's not the end of it. You have the server issues. You have to sync up the simulation, you know, on many different instances and make sure it's consistent. So it is an uphill battle, but I think it's worth it.
Okay. That's very interesting. We don't have that much time left, but I wanted to ask, because this is about LaForge, and I really wanted to know, because there are probably some PhDs listening right now, you know, what would you tell the PhDs that are thinking about this kind of journey and what they should think about when they're entering this kind of trip?
Well, I mean, my first advice is like...
Yeah, let's have it.
Well, I mean, if there are... Okay, so wait a second. They're inside Ubisoft, or they are thinking about graduating and then come work for
Ubisoft? Let's
say
they were thinking about graduating from the outside.
From outside, okay.
From outside. Let's start with outside.
All right, that makes it, okay, even better. Have some self-confidence and have some vision, and not just have as sort of like magically have it. I mean, it needs some insight, and you build insight, right? More often than not, when you do graduate studies, you're sort of like you're shy. You don't have self-confidence, and then you just listen to your prof, and we have amazing profs. It's just they're just following their own agenda, right? But if you have your own dream, your own vision, you know, I'm going to work on this because one day I want to solve this problem, then you can actually take control of your PhD. It's going to be better because you will be more passionate about what you're doing. It will hopefully, whatever you have as thesis, and let's face it, nobody's going to read your thesis 99%, including yourself of the time. But if you make it practical, then you're going to have a better PhD, you're going to enjoy it, and you're going to have a better shot at finding jobs. A job that actually not only pays well, but also makes you happier, like day to day. And that is, I wish somebody told me, like, you know, many years ago this. I sort of
found it
the hard way.
Yeah.
With you.
Thank you very much, guys. I totally appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that was fun.
So thanks for listening to Tech Makers, the Ubisoft podcast. I'm David Usher, and I will see you next time. We'll be talking about Forging the Future, all about action. See you then.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.